Welcome to the Casey Kowar Show, a celebration of words. I'm delighted to have as my guest today Carolyn Parkhurst, and we will be discussing Lost and Found, her new novel, which is now available in bookstores and online, published by Little Brown. First of all, Carolyn, thank you so much for your time today.
Thank you for having me on.
In 2003, you published Dogs of Babel, and it was a literary phenomenon, and it became a bestseller. The Today Show picked it. And for a first novel, it really reached a level of acclaim and sales that's very rare. And I would imagine that you must have been obviously delighted, but very surprised at the success of The Dogs of Babel because of the nature and the tone of the first novel.
Yeah, absolutely. I really never expected that, you know, that my first novel would sell so well, or, you know, that any novel would necessarily sell that well. But I was really delighted, and you know, I feel very lucky that things worked out the way they did.
And I think that one of the things about Dogs of Babel is my late friend Andre DeBuse used to say that, publishers don't give readers enough credit for having the ability to deal with loss and tragedy and dark subjects. And I think that one of the reasons I was happy that Dogs of Babel was successful was I think that that refutes that concept that people are able to deal with books about grief and loss, and it doesn't have to have a happy ending.
Yeah, I think that's very true. I think that's an interesting point about publishers not giving readers credit. You know, they seem to think that everyone wants a light beach read all the time, and certainly people want that sometimes. But, you know, I think readers are very varied in terms of their tastes and what they're looking for in a book.
Mm-hmm. So, with Lost and Found, which I say recently published by Little Brown, I was delighted because when they sent me the galleys, a lot of times an author has success with the first novel, and then the sophomore effort doesn't meet the expectations. But I actually preferred Lost and Found to Dogs of Babel and found it much more compelling, more interesting, more characters. And I was just so happy for you that you made that leap from the first to the second novel. And I really enjoyed Lost and Found more than Dogs of Babel. Not to speak poorly of Dogs of Babel, but I thought it showed a lot of growth in you as a writer.
Well, thank you. I'm really happy to hear that. I had a lot of anxiety about writing a second novel, and, you know, I think especially when the first one has had success, there's kind of this impulse to say, well, can I do something similar again? And I didn't want to do that. I wanted to challenge myself and sort of try something completely new. And so this is a very different book. You know, the first book had basically three characters, and this one has, you know, one of the characters being a dog in the first book, so that was, you know, a very different thing from this book, which has seven different narrators, and, you know, the characters are traveling around to different locations. I had to do a lot of research about things like that, and there are a lot of practical issues to figure out. So it was a very challenging book to write, but it was also a lot of fun because it gave me a chance to immerse myself in the world of television, specifically reality television, and it was very interesting.
Yes, and I think that For the listeners, Lost and Found is a reality TV show, kind of loosely based on one of the popular shows. But the phenomenon of reality TV is a very modern phenomenon, and you really can't chase topics. So I'm wondering, Carolyn, when did you really begin to formulate the idea for this novel and start writing it? Because, I mean, you probably saw the germ of the idea developing, but to write a novel with the depth that you wrote, you had to kind of see this happening a little bit ahead of time, I would guess.
Yeah, it took me about 2.5 years to write this book. I had the idea for it already when The Dogs of Babel came out in 2003. So I was a little bit concerned about whether this was a book with a limited shelf life, you know, that that people were going to be completely sick of reality TV by the time I got the book finished, or, you know, whatever. But my hope is that even though the setting of the book is reality television, there's more to it than that. It's more about the characters and the relationships between them and the complexity of their lives. And so I hope that, you know, whether you like reality TV or hate it, that there will be something there that readers will find compelling.
Yes, I would agree. And I think that the way you pair the groups up and their motivations for getting involved in Lost and Found is one of the most interesting aspects of the novel. And I would have to say that, a couple of my favorite groups were the mother-daughter Laura Cassie team, and then the ex-gay married couple Justin and Abby. And if you would tell the listeners just a little bit about when you were deciding how you were going to pair the teams up for the TV show, like how many did you originally start out with, and how did you end up with seven? Was going to be how you're going to.
The way it works in the book is that there are teams of two people who know each other already, who are going around the world finding these objects as part of the game, and I had originally imagined that I would be focusing on the mother-daughter team, Laura and Cassie. They were very interesting to me. It's a single mother and her teenage daughter who's 18 years old. And recently, the daughter, Cassie, has hidden an entire pregnancy. Her mother never realized she was pregnant, and Cassie gave birth to a baby alone in her bedroom one night, and her mother didn't find out until afterward. And I was very interested in that particular story, you know, because you hear these things on the news, you know, about teenage girls doing things like that, and you think, well, how could no one have noticed? And I wanted to look at that question a little more deeply. So at first I imagined I would be going back and forth between their two perspectives, and that everyone else on the game show would just be sort of background and sort of filler characters. But as I began to work with these characters, I became very interested in what everyone else's story was too. You know, originally I put in this ex-gay married couple because it seemed like the kind of stunt casting that a reality show might do, you know, like mm-hmm. thinking that viewers would find that kind of freaky and weird. And I almost imagined that they would be sort of stereotypes. And then the more I thought about it, the more I was interested in exploring what would make a person deny something as essential to them as their sexuality and try to change that. And I wanted to look at them as full-fledged people and not relegate them to stereotypes.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And the same is true of some of the other characters. There's a team of former child stars that I put in there almost for comic relief, and then the more I thought about it, I thought, you know, I kind of want to get to the heart of what's going on with them, too. So it was sort of a process of me becoming more and more interested in who the whole cast of characters were, and wanting to get beyond what, you know, the very surface TV persona would have been.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And there are a couple that are millionaire brothers that are inventors, and they get involved. And that was one of the things that really interested me, was the kind of the fascination that with reality TV that $1 million is going to make someone happy. And so there's kind of a resentment that why would anyone who had money be involved in pursuing some kind of a prize?
Right. You know, I have everyone in the book saying, why are these two guys on the show at all? And the question isn't really answered, but I think it's sort of that, you know, everyone craves adventure and everyone craves being in the spotlight to some degree or other. And, you know, it isn't all about the money. I think reality TV wouldn't be as interesting as it is if it were just about the money. It's about the feeling that you're watching a journey that could actually affect someone's real life, as opposed to characters that are written, you know, made up by Hollywood screenwriters or something like that.
Mm-hmm. And there's a new book out that I haven't read it yet, but I've read a couple reviews, called Stumbling on Happiness by Daniel Todd Gilbert, a Harvard psychologist, about how people have a certain level of happiness in their lives, and events that happen to them tend to maybe reset their level of happiness for a short period of time, but then they go back to who they were.
Right. I've heard about that. That's very interesting, I think.
Yeah, and I think that when I was reading your book, I was thinking that I think part of the fascination with reality TV is that thinking that there's an external factor that could happen that's going to make us happy. And as your characters get further and further along in Lost and Found, really the base instincts and the things that are really core primal emotions come out, and really the money kind of becomes really a secondary issue as the novel progresses.
Right. I have one character, it's Justin, one of the ex-gay married couple, who says that the way these shows keep viewers interested is by encouraging dissatisfaction, by making people think that their lives would be so much better if only they had $1 million, or if only they had some more adventure in their lives, or, you know, different shows, or their shows that focus on the search for love or whatever instead of money. But there's this idea that if only you could go on a show like this, maybe your life would be better than it is. And I think you're right that people aren't always good at predicting what's going to make them happy. And, you know, the million-dollar prize kind of becomes beside the point.
Mm-hmm. And Carolyn, with your own success from the Dogs of Babel and the way that changed your life, did that have an impact on Lost and Found as you were writing it, as you began to receive the fame and money that comes with having a book that's selling a lot? Did that alter your perception of the book as you were writing it?
Maybe so. That's an interesting question. I haven't really thought about that. But, you know, it's interesting to be a writer who's had some success, because you still don't become a famous person. You know,
mm-hmm.
some writers do, certainly. John Grisham and Stephen King, I'm sure, get recognized on the street all the time. But, you know, most people don't. And so it's this kind of weird thing where you're getting this little glimpse of what it might be like to be sort of a celebrity, but you're extremely minor as far as the celebrity goes. So that really made me think a lot about what it would be like for these characters, Juliet and Dallas, who are the former child stars, who have had some measure of fame in their lives, and now they're out of the spotlight, and they've grown up, and people aren't finding them as interesting anymore. They're not getting the work, and they're really craving having them back in their life. So I think, you know, my own tiny brush with fame has sort of informed the way I thought about them.
Mm-hmm. And Carolyn, tell us a little bit about your background before Dogs of Babel, before Lost and Found. What your background was prior to writing Dogs of Babel?
Well, I pretty much always wanted to be a writer, but I was never really sure how to make that a reality. And after college, I worked in a bookstore for 3 years, and that was very interesting for sort of getting to know what the world of books is like, what the retail sales end of it looks like, you know, what books sell and what don't. After that, I went to graduate school. I got a Master of Fine Arts in Creative Writing, which was a very valuable experience for me, not because it taught me to write or anything like that, but because it gave me a chance to really focus on my writing and to be around other people who are also engaged in writing, and that's what they were spending their time on right now. And after that, I just started writing Dogs of Babel. It took me also about 2.5 years, and that's about it. I had never tried to write a novel before Dogs of Babel. I had only written short stories, so I wasn't at all certain whether I was going to be able to sustain a plot for a full 300 pages or whatever. And, you know, it was kind of frightening, but it was also what I've always wanted to do, and I had this feeling like, well, if I'm going to be a writer, I better give this a try.
Mm-hmm.
And second time around, it was slightly easier, but I think I have a feeling that writers never lose the kind of fear of, you know, facing the blank page and will I be able to do this again?
Right, right. I know James Lee Burke's The Lost Get Back Boogie was rejected 111 times before it was accepted.
Incredible.
And then when it was published, it was a finalist for the Pulitzer Prize.
Right. It just shows you, I mean, one of the things that's so frustrating about the publishing industry is, you know, it's very subjective. Obviously, everybody likes different things and is looking for different things in a book, but you get told over and over, oh, I don't think there's a market for your work, by people who have never read your work, and it can be very frustrating.
Mm-hmm.
And certainly there are a lot of fine writers who are still in that 111 rejections phase and are hoping to get to the point where someone will at least give them a chance to see how it goes.
Mm-hmm. But I think you bring up a very interesting point, is that you say you spent 3 years in a bookstore, and I think Dogs of Babel, I think booksellers read that book and they liked it, and I think there's a phrase they use in book selling which is called hand selling a book.
Right.
And I think that was a book I think that booksellers embraced and recommended it to people, and that is very critical to the success of a book.
It absolutely is, and I felt like there was this kind of karma at work, because when I worked in a bookstore, one of the greatest pleasures of that job was being able to pick a book that I really loved and try to sell it to people who came in looking for something else, you know, or,
mm-hmm.
or who weren't sure what they were looking for. And I remember my big one was The Virgin Suicides by Jeffrey Eugenides. I love that book, and I was probably personally responsible for selling like 40 copies of it or something, you know. Mm-hmm. And I would say, you know, just give it a chance, and you know, so it was very kind of exciting to think of a few years down the line, other booksellers doing the same thing with my work. And you know, I think booksellers have quite a bit of power, considering that it's a low-paid retail job.
Exactly, exactly. And Carolyn, what are you happiest about as an author from The Dogs of Babel to Lost and Found? When you read The Final Galleys and finally sent it in to your editor, what was the biggest growth you saw between the first novel and the second novel?
Well, I feel like I there was sort of this outward spiral of opening up. I'm kind of not making sense here, but I felt like I wrote a much bigger book this time.
Mm-hmm.
And that was important to me. You know, the first book, The Dogs of Babel, I'm pleased with it, but it's a very small book in certain ways. It deals with one man and his grief and his looking back on his marriage and his relationship with his wife, and there's not a lot of the outside world in the book. And so it was important to me to open up the plot a little bit in the second book and try to see if I could juggle more characters, more perspectives, things like that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I would. That's what I thought you would say, and I would really like to stress to the listeners that, you know, you see a book like Lost and Found, and you see that it's about reality TV, and please don't make the mistake to think that this is a shallow topical book, because really when you get into it, it really is the plot lines are well developed, and we're not going to give anything away about the book, but I think that the storylines really all have a payoff as the novel progresses, and I really enjoyed the book, and I'm going to make it my July book recommendation because I think it's not only enjoyable and entertaining, but I think it also speaks to the nature of the world we live in right now, and particularly the ex-gay married couple, Justin and Abby. That's just a fascinating plot line, and that probably when you were writing it, were there times where you said, I might be walking the line here in terms of with the rest of the book?
Yeah, a little bit. That plot line sort of scared me the most, which I think is valuable as a writer to pay attention to your fears, the things where you say, I don't know if I should really be writing about this. I think that's where some of your most interesting material comes from. And I just really, you know, I started off with this kind of bias against them, almost thinking, well, you know, who are these people who decided to reform their sexuality? And, you know, I kind of, at the beginning, I didn't have much respect for them. And the more I tried to get inside their head and to make them a little more, to understand the complexity of the decisions they've made, Abby became really my favorite character, probably. You know, she was the most interesting one to write.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I think you make an interesting point about people assuming that a book about reality TV might be shallow. I think that with both my books, I've had unusual premises, which in some cases can work for me or can work against me. I think someone could pick up The Dogs of Babel and say, oh, a book about a guy teaching a dog to talk, that sounds kind of stupid. Or they might say, that sounds great. And the same with a book about reality TV. But in both cases, those premises were just sort of the backbone to hang the story on and to help me give it structure. And really what I'm most interested in is the relationships between characters and their own internal struggles.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, Carolyn, thank you very much for your time today. I really enjoyed Lost and Found. I think it's a perfect book to buy, put in your suitcase, and read on vacation or on a plane or in the privacy of your own home, however you want to read it. But I do think it's I'm just so happy to see you follow through on the promise of The Dogs of Babel with Lost and Found, and excited to see you know, where the third book takes you. And I won't put you on the spot and ask you what that's about, because I learned a long time ago not to do that. But best of luck with Lost and Found, and I look forward to catching up with you down the road when the next book does come out.
Well, thank you very much. It's been a pleasure to talk to you.